As always at Sesshin, it's a good time to reflect on our practice. And also perhaps to use Sesshin to experience some kind of sense of renewal. I wonder how many of you actually consider how really fortunate we are to be here today. For many people, their bodies or the external circumstances of their lives prevent them from doing something like this. So it's really good to remember to be thankful for this opportunity, even in those times when it's not particularly pleasing to us. So what are we thankful for? For one thing, given the busy state of most of our lives, we rarely have the opportunity to just sit down and really reflect on our practice, really reflect on our life. Yet Sesshin, especially these longer ones, is an ideal time for this type of reflection. And I'm not suggesting that you, when I use the term reflection, I'm not suggesting that you sit here thinking or analyzing about your practice or your life. I'm really talking about doing what you could describe as one of the simplest and yet at the same time most difficult things for us to do as human beings, which basically is to sit still and just be present, to just do nothing but be here. It's really very simple if you think about it, and yet when we try and do it, very few things are harder, at least to sustain. So I'm talking about reflecting without the usual busyness or activity of the mind. What's involved is basically to let whatever comes up in the mind, in the body, to let it come up. And if possible, to invite it in, to welcome it in. And I'm not just talking about the good parts, I'm talking about all of it. So that includes the moments of resistance, which we'll no doubt feel during Sesshin, the moments of boredom, which we'll no doubt feel, all of the endless judgments of the mind. The idea is to let it all come up and then just watch it. Let it reflect in the mirror of awareness. Elizabeth talked yesterday about the teacher, in a way, being a mirror to the student, mirroring back to the student what the student might need to see. But what this path ultimately requires is that each of us be able to shine that mirror, to enter into or cultivate that mirror of awareness where we could really see ourselves, where we could really see our life clearly. You see, observing ourselves in this way doesn't require thinking, and it doesn't require analyzing, and it doesn't require judging. The only thing it requires is just watching. Watching the reflection of ourself. So when things come up during Sesshin that we don't like, and that's sure to happen for everybody here, the main thing we have to remember then is that whatever comes up is our teacher. It's our teacher in that there's always something that we can learn from our experience. We have to be willing to put aside our usual attitude of mind, which sees the things we don't like in a way as the enemy or as some obstacle that we have to conquer or get away from. So, in other words, as you sit here over these next few days, don't try to change your experience. Just be aware. And in a way, this is what it means when we say we need to be willing to say yes to our experience. Saying yes means we have a particular kind of willingness or curiosity of mind that's willing to look at and ultimately to be with or experience whatever there is. It means that we don't have to live out of our cherished self-images that we bring with us to Sesshin, such as to be calm or clear or compassionate, or maybe to be Zen-like, whatever that might mean to you. Instead, can we just acknowledge who we are? Just see the reflection of who we are and acknowledge it with all of our imagined or so-called shortcomings. I'm talking about the possibility of giving up our ideal of perfection, which I'm fairly sure every single person in this room has in some form or another. Maybe to make this real for you, think right now of what self-images you're clinging to in Sesshin, even today. Anybody want to give an example? We all have one. We all have many. Okay, Claudia.
A skillful, handy woman.
Okay. And do you cherish that one?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody else? You are a skillful, handy woman, by the way.
Yes, I am.
But it's different from cherishing the image of it. Yeah, Paul?
A hardworking, nice guy.
Mm-hmm. And you are a nice guy, and you are hardworking. How about you, Peter?
I would say a success in business.
And do you have that self-image here?
No.
What do you have here? What do you have today?
Just the breeze, the moment.
What self-image do you have when you come into Daisan? How do you want to be seen?
Multiple questions, many questions. Mm-hmm. I'm not so much thinking about an image as many questions on the mind.
Okay. Maybe you could observe that the next time you come into Daisan as you're coming in. Just ask yourself, what self-image are you clinging to in that moment? Just see if there's one there that's apparent. Yeah, Robin?
I came in with the self-image that it was very much more Zen-like to be sitting on a cushion than sitting on a chair, and it's not happening like that.
Yeah, and so isn't it great to have to sit on a chair? In terms, not so great in your feelings, but isn't it great in terms of reflecting back to yourself exactly what you need to see in order to be free?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Everybody who is very attached to sitting on the floor and who prides themselves of never having to sit in a chair because you're more Zen-like, you should just make yourself sit in a chair. Or if you think, I'll never do Orioki with a table. We don't have enough tables to do this, but it might be good to just see what it feels like to sit with it, to eat with a table. I'm not saying it's better to eat with a table. I actually prefer to sit down on the floor doing Orioki. I prefer to sit on the ground for doing Zazen. I'm talking about the self-image that we're holding to, which is a totally separate thing from the act itself. See, the constant effort that it takes for all of us to try and fulfill these self-images that we cling to is not only an ongoing drain on our energy, which it certainly is if you observe yourself, But it's also the source of a lot of our anxiety. Anxiety over not being able to live out of these pictures that we have, these ideals that we have of how we're supposed to be. Maybe you've observed this within yourself, that without these self-images, we feel in a way exposed, both to ourselves and also to others. And maybe we even feel that if the truth about us were really known, if we were really seen without these veneers of the self-image, of the self-images, then we might be seen, as one example, as worthless or as not enough in some way. That's why we cling to these, so we don't have to feel this. I mean, isn't this true? Haven't you experienced this? But the alternative to living out of these self-images is just to honestly acknowledge ourselves exactly as we are right now. And that, in part, is what it means to really just, whatever is there, come up and be observed without any added judgments. Or if the judgments are there, to observe them as well. Again, what I'm talking about is watching or reflecting, watching all the reflections of our many me's, the many, many ways that we try to present ourselves. I quoted this before, but I love the line from T.S. Eliot's poem, The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock, when he said, watching ourselves prepare a face to meet the faces that we meet. And you could think about that line the next time maybe that you come into Daisan, or when you come into the Zendo, or when you come to meet somebody that you want to somehow impress or whatever. Watching ourselves in this way, just watching the reflections of these things, is one way that we can bring loving kindness to ourselves. Loving kindness is not just a meditation practice that we do. It's an attitude of mind. It's the attitude of not judging. It's the attitude of seeing all of the stuff that we have as just conditioning and nothing more. And being able to see it with a kind of warmth and understanding for what it is. And when we could do that, then maybe we don't have to make so much of an effort to present ourselves in some particular way. You know, trying to be special in any way keeps us solidly stuck in sleep. And that's one of the reasons that we recite the line, no one special to be. It's a reminder to us that we don't have to keep trying to do this, to be a somebody. So whether you're serving, maybe serving meals, or walking through the Zendo, or walking through the yard, or whatever you're doing, watch yourself. Watch the need to be special. Watch whatever self-image you're holding to, and feel what that is. In that moment that you see it, feel what that experience is that you're holding to in that moment. We could also watch, this is a little bit different thing, we could also watch our ongoing tendency to constantly seek distractions. And I'm not just talking about it's a shame, because we might do it a little less here, but really all the time. You know, we could ask ourselves, why do we want to constantly keep busy? Or why do we want to keep eating when we're not hungry? Why do we want to keep trying to distract ourselves with entertainment? What is it that drives us to do all this stuff that we all do, at least some of the time? It's in part, not completely, but it's in part because we want to get away from ourselves. We want to get away from being present with the discomfort that might be in our being in that moment. Perhaps the part of us that tells us that we're not enough in some way, that feeling of a hole of anxiety or quiver, or however we experience it. As if something were lacking. But what is lacking? Nothing. Nothing is lacking. It's only our thoughts and the discomfort in our bodies that tells us otherwise. The very deeply conditioned belief that we're not enough is literally embedded in ourselves. That's why we experience it as an anxious quiver in our being. But paradoxically, the freedom from being driven by this fear that we're not enough in some way comes from being willingly present with it, from watching it and feeling what it is. So again, the practice, when we see this, when we feel it in ourselves, instead of seeking the distraction or going doing the thing to keep busy, can we just pause? Can we observe it? Can we invite it in? And can we just feel it for what it is? That's what the practice is. Simply being present also allows us to stop struggling, to stop trying so hard to accomplish or to prove ourselves or to fill the imagined hole inside. Again, to cover over whatever sense of lack or sense of inadequacy we might believe is there. I know that at times it can be frightening when we stop the struggle to get somewhere or to get something or to be somebody because we're so used to it. It's become our kind of default setting. But when we stop the struggle, when we stop trying to measure up or prove ourselves, when we stop trying to be somebody or stop trying to fill the hole inside, it's possible to experience the sense of space, the sense of inner spaciousness that comes when we can be at home with ourselves. And really being at home with ourselves, which is sometimes very difficult to come by, is one of the prime benefits of being in Sesshin. Of sitting here and allowing the body and mind to settle down over the 5 days and realizing that whatever comes up, including all the things that we don't like about ourselves or don't want within ourselves, to be able to have it be there and to acknowledge it again with the acceptance or the warmth of loving kindness, that's when we can be truly at home with ourselves. And when we can do this, it's a great gift to ourselves that no one else can give to us. No teacher can give it to us. It could only come from the inside. But as we've said many, many times here, practice is never a straight line to a fixed goal. It's always going to be a mixture of moments of confusion about what we're doing with moments of clarity where we can really see what the path is. Where there's periods of discouragement, which we'll all probably have at least momentarily during Sesshin, with periods of aspiration. And also the times where we might feel like we're a failure in what we're doing, and how that might alternate with the times when we can really go deeper. And hopefully we can all experience that during Sesshin. You know, practice always has these ups and downs, certainly throughout the course of a whole Sesshin. And on a smaller scale, also, if you observe yourself, you'll see these fluctuations, these ups and downs in the course of a given day. Even on an even smaller scale, you could observe it during the course of any given sitting. But if you know about this, if you know about these fluctuations, because they're natural, they're inevitable, you won't be blindsided by them. When they come up, they're just the natural course of practice. And instead, you could just watch the mind take its inevitable ride. As our moods change, as our emotions arise and fall, as external things happen that might trigger us. So through all of this, through all of the ups and downs, the most basic practice is to rest your mind in the breath. To rest your mind in the environment. To rest your mind in the silence, which includes the endless chatter of the mind. But please remember, we enter the silence not by trying to be there, but just through the constant soft effort to simply be present, to simply be here. We use the dual awareness of breath and environment as our anchors. So right now I'd like you to just take a few moments to really feel the experience of the breath. Not the thought of the breath, but the actual physical experience of breathing, particularly as the breath reverberates in the center of the chest. And feel it fully. And while staying with the breath, you can also experience the sense of spaciousness, including the light and the sounds. The whole environment outside of the skin boundary. Using these two anchors, the awareness of breath and the awareness of the environment, feel right now, if you can, the sense of presence in that. The sense of I am here, or the visceral experience of presence. And then as we sit with this as our established practice, we let whatever comes up, come up. And that can include the mindless daydreams that don't seem to stop, the compulsion to plan, the proclivity to have internal conversations, the moments of spacing out And also the periods where discomfort or pain, either emotional pain or physical pain, can become fairly intense. As best you can, just watch all of it. And if you can, simultaneously stay aware of breath and environment. Again, this is the practice of letting the mind's activities reflect in the mirror of awareness. And this is how we could use these days of sitting still, basically doing nothing, in a way help us awaken the sense of what's most real and what's most important. The dual awareness practice can become a doorway or a portal into reality. Remember, as long as we live in the bubble of our thoughts and our judgment, we're cut off from the mystery of our being. Yet, we can often tap into this mystery through just a simple, quiet sense of presence in the moment. Through watching the mind with the mirror of awareness. That's all I wanted to say today, but perhaps somebody might have a question. Rafi?
That is rather a request and a question. The request is, I'm wondering if you'd be willing to read that line from T.S. Eliot again, just one more time. And the question is, can you say more what you mean by soft effort?
The line is to watch ourselves prepare a face to meet the faces that we meet.
Say that one more time.
To watch ourselves prepare a face to meet the faces that we meet.
Okay.
To watch ourselves when we walk from one room into another, put on our self-image. It's usually so quick and so beneath the level of consciousness that we don't even know that we're preparing a face to meet what we're going to meet. It's what keeps us asleep. One of the things, our total identification with our self-image. A soft effort is an effort where we're not trying to do. There's not like an Ezra or a Rafi involved in trying to accomplish or push. It's more, I mean, you have to have discipline. We know this. We can't just give up effort altogether. But the effort of loving kindness is more of a soft effort because we're really not doing anything. What we're doing, if you want to call it doing, is just calling forth or cultivating a gentler frame of mind that just reminds us not to judge. That's basically what it is. It's reminding us that we really and truly are okay exactly as we are, which we don't believe for a second, but it's something that we can come to experience within ourselves that it is true. Janet?
A lot of things that come up for me in Sesshin are very easy to have a self-judgment about. And I don't really want to have a self-judgment, and I'm not sure I even want to feel regret. But I do think a lot of the time remorse is probably appropriate. And that's a real slippery slope for me. Judgment to regret to remorse or back the other way. Could you talk a little bit about that?
I wouldn't call it so much a slippery slope as I would that the line that separates feeling regret, including feeling guilt, and how that can take hold of us in a particular way, which would always include self-judgments. It really is, in a way, distinctly different from the genuine experience of remorse, but they can get clouded together in our mind. And honestly, the only way that I know of for us to be able to determine the difference is by the internal experience that we have when we're experiencing self-judgment of guilt or regret. For example, there's a particular kind of constriction that comes from the mind. When we experience genuine remorse, it comes from the heart. And the visceral experience of it is different. Now, I know that we could have them simultaneously too, and that's where it gets a little bit tricky. And that's where we just have to work through this by just observing and watching and letting our observations become more and more refined. Okay? Yeah, Bill?
You know, it's easy enough to observe yourself sitting. I mean, when you have that intention, it's. I find it so difficult, like you say, moving from room to room, or having an interaction. I mean, it's the first thing that I lose. I mean, I just immediately start identifying with my thoughts and so on. I wonder, what would you do to try to break that pattern? It's, because you're sort of in the water at the time, you know?
Well, one thing we could always do is if we know that this is a difficulty for us, which it is for everybody, we can remind ourselves to just pause. For example, interacting in a conversation with somebody, we could pause even if it's only for 2 or 3 seconds before we speak, and remember to just take a breath in and to maybe just feel the heart just very briefly. And then when we speak, it might come from a slightly different place and we might not be so completely identified or actually totally asleep to whatever's going on as we are often. And the same is true during working. I mean, like you're working outside and you're sawing with a skill saw and you're, you know, putting wood together. And I'm not suggesting that when you do that, you should be trying to observe yourself then. A job like that, the practice is a little bit different. The job is to just really concentrate and pay attention to what you're doing. But then there are many moments in between when you might be moving from the yard to the house or interacting with whoever you're working with, where you can take a pause, because then the practice becomes more back to observation. And it is difficult. This is, again, one of the refinements of practice. It's very worthwhile, though. Yeah. Barbara?
What is the silence that includes the chattering?
Honestly, I don't want to say anything. So you could just take it, all of you, could just take it for however you understand what that might be, instead of me trying to describe it. And just work with that. If it's like a real question for you, just work with that, okay?
I didn't hear the question.
Oh, sorry. It was a term Ezra used in his talk, which is to, I can't remember it now, it's
what? To experience, what does it mean to experience the silence? The question was, what does it mean, what does the silence mean when I say we need to experience, or we can experience the silence that includes the endless chatter? Okay? Yeah, Al?
Since we're in Sesheen, and since this is an issue that comes up for me over and over again, how in the practice of dual awareness do you deal with pain that comes up in Sesheen? I mean, I know I've dealt with it many, many times, but there are still kinds of pain that I really don't want to have. And I notice that I don't want to have them, and, you know, and I try to include that with the sound of the seagulls and the breath and the bells. And, mm-hmm. But I still really don't want that pain.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about physical pain?
Physical pain, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just sheer physical pain. Just ordinary, you know, either knee or, in my case, it tends to be the back or even the rear end when I sit on a hard surface like a chair.
Okay. How many people in the room want to experience physical pain? Anybody? You could go to the masochist room in the back. I don't know anybody. Well, I shouldn't say that because there probably are some people who do want. Yeah, there definitely are some people who want to experience physical pain, but most of us here don't want to experience physical pain. And
emotional maybe,
but physical not. And so part of including it in the practice of dual awareness is to understand that this is part of being human, the natural aversion to physical pain, that can be included in the experience of breath and environment, as well as can be included when we have the thoughts that come out of that aversion, like whether they're angry thoughts, I don't want this, or for some people it could be thoughts of self-pity, like some version of poor me that I'm having to sit here feeling this ache in my back or in my knee. Some people it can be fearful thoughts, like what if this keeps getting worse, what am I going to do, am I going to be able to stay here? To be able to include those kinds of thoughts, to observe those thoughts, to reflect in the mirror of awareness those thoughts in the bigger space of breath and environment is part of the practice. But I also want to add, because working with pain has a lot of different sizes, you know, sometimes the practice of working with pain means that we do something practical, like change our position, or go for a walk, or take Advil when it gets too strong, because we need to use our common sense. Sometimes the practice of working with pain might mean doing a really straightforward samadhi practice of just going, not doing dual awareness, but going like completely 100% into the physical experience. And sometimes that's very helpful. Maybe not for a really long time, but it can be very helpful for short sitting periods. So there's a lot of different ways of working with it. And I feel like when attention, the mind is like, the attention in the mind like fills up a channel, okay? And so if we're consumed with pain and we just keep thinking about the pain and worrying about the pain, it fills up the whole channel. If we can observe the thoughts that are there, if we can observe and feel the breath, if we can observe and experience the environment, all of those observations and feeling are also in the channel. And then the channel, the pain part isn't filling up the whole channel anymore. It's not all that we're experiencing. What we're experiencing is breath, environment, and within that there's some pain. And it does in fact become more tolerable even when we don't want it. So I know this isn't a real answer in the sense of like, there's no answer because we're not gonna get rid of the pain. This is like the first noble truth, isn't it? That life will include pain. And so, but it is a way of helping us relate to it a little bit differently, particularly being able to tease out the thoughts that arise out of the pain and realize that they're not necessarily true and that they can be observed and labeled. Yeah. We have time for one more. So Christy, you had your hand up. Do you still want to ask a question?
The difference between personality traits and self-image, because, you know, we're all unique individuals and people are born certain ways, nice or handy or intelligent. And
right.
So people are operating just as they are and being those things, And then when does it become, so anyway, I'm kind of like on this line of, am I trying to prop up a self-image by trying to do a good job as cook?
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, so I don't know how to look at that exactly.
Yeah, it's maybe a little bit vague, but if you think of it like this, I'm a nice guy, just like most of you here are nice guys and nice women and so forth. I am a nice guy, but if I hold to an image of myself as a nice guy, can you see that they're two different things? I'm a very clear thinker. I am a clear thinker. I'm not saying that with pride. I was born with it. It's no merit attached to it. I'm a clear thinker. But if I'm attached to being a clear thinker, if I want to present myself as a clear thinker, that's something separate from just a natural trait. And when we're identified with or attached to any part of ourself, whether it's positive, whether it's our traits that are generally considered the nicer traits, or attached to, in a negative way, our other side traits, like maybe we're attached to feeling like we're unworthy or unlovable, because we are attached to those also, and we hold to those also. All of those attachments are sleep. They prevent us from being here because we're in the mind. We're living out of a picture. When you're in the kitchen cooking and just being a good cook and being efficient, that's just living. But if you're in there thinking, are people going to think I'm a good cook because the rice came out really good, then where are you then?
Okay.
You're in your head.
Yeah, or if I make a mistake and I'm worried about people are going to think, then I'm
right.
Going into a different
place. And because you're thinking about what will people think.
Yeah.
Whereas making a mistake is just a very natural thing to do, and then you do whatever you can with it. Yeah, Elizabeth, you want to add something?
Just in my many years as a concertizing musician, what was so interesting over and over and over again was to be in the middle of a piece of music, maybe with a bunch of people listening, and as long as the focus was on the music, there wasn't a problem if I knew the music. You know, the emphasis was on music. And as soon as it would go over, maybe one passage would go in a way that it had never gone quite that well before, and suddenly this little voice would say, wow, that was terrific, and the emphasis would be on the Elizabeth. And those were the moments in which some of the more interesting improvisations occurred. You know, it was when the me was the star of the movie instead of the music, which mm-hmm. What's the point of music? Music.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, before I start Dharma talks, I try and take a few moments to just feel who I am in the moment and to just kind of assess what self-image am I being in right in that moment. Is it, you know, wanting to appear calm and clear, even if I have a little nervousness inside, or just wanting to look any particular way, just to assess that. But then I always put it aside and I just think for a moment, what is it I really want to say? It's like with the music, just presenting the music. I think about, like today, what I really wanted to impart more than anything was what it means to just sit here and just observe ourselves within the mirror of awareness and learn to settle down and be at home with ourselves. That's like, for me, the main message. So to focus on that, that's like doing the job in the kitchen rather than focusing on how am I going to look or how am I going to appear to people, because that's always it's always something that's a head trip rather than reality. I know you want to probably ask something, and I don't want you to start thinking about this, but I want to stop so we could have time for Daisan now, okay? And if you do have questions about it, please feel free to bring it up to either of us in Daisan. Thank you.